Good evening. It's Bedtime Stories with Thompson. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
What chapter is it, Thompson?
Chapter 16.
No, wait, don't say it while you're yawning.
Wait.
Read it clearly.
Chapter 6, Bunny in the Pacific Ocean.
Chapter 6 of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. You mean we're not going to You know what I mean? You mean we're not going on land to hunt? Cried Ned angrily. Then I refuse to go. Conseil, however, followed me everywhere, so he fell in behind me as Captain Nemo led us to a small dressing room. Two crewmen helped us on with our heavy rubber waterproof diving suits and thick shoes weighted with lead. Next, they screwed large metal and glass helmets onto the threaded collars of our suits and strapped air tanks to our backs. We began to breathe easily. Last, they hooked electric lamps onto our belts and placed air guns in our hands. These guns shot tiny glass bullets containing powerful electrical charges. We moved to a small compartment next to the dressing room, and a watertight door was sealed. Soon I felt cold water rising from my feet to my chest and my head. When the compartment was completely flooded, a door in the hull of the Nautilus opened. A moment later, Captain Nemo led us out onto the ocean floor. We started walking along a sandy plain towards a group of rocks covered with many varieties and colors of zoophytes, which are tiny sea animals that look like plants and flowers. Overhead, schools of fish swam by. It was a marvelous feast for my eyes. After we had been walking for an hour, the ground began to slope sharply downward. Ahead of us lay a narrow valley between two high walls. This valley, 500 feet beneath the surface, contained large tree-like plants whose branches rose straight up. The valley floor was covered with sharp rocks and shadowy plants which did not flower in these dark depths of the ocean. This, then, was the forest of Crespo Island. We went deeper into it for the next several hours until we came to a huge wall of rock, the edge of the island itself. This was as far as Captain Nemo would go, for this wall of rock was dry land, and he had sworn never to set foot on dry land again. As we turned to head back to the Nautilus, Captain Nemo suddenly stopped and raised his gun. I heard a faint hissing sound and saw an animal fall dead a few feet away. It was a magnificent sea otter whose brown and silver fur was worth hundreds of dollars on land. It was a strange-looking animal with its round head, short ears, cat-like whiskers, clawed, webbed feet, and furry tail. One of the crewmen lifted the 5-foot-long creature onto his shoulders and carried it back with us to the Nautilus. Once we were inside the compartment, Captain Nemo pressed a button. The outside door closed and the pumps began lowering the water level. Soon the compartment was dry and we stepped into the dressing room. During the days and weeks that followed, I hardly saw Captain Nemo. The panels in the lounge were kept open so Ned, Conseil, and I could watch the mysteries of underwater life. The first mate marked our position on the chart so I was able to follow our course. We had just passed the Hawaiian Islands and were heading southeast in the Pacific Ocean. We had already traveled 4,860 leagues, or 14,580 miles, from our starting point off the coast of Japan. On the night of December 11th, the Nautilus lay motionless at a depth of 3,000 feet. I was in the lounge reading when Conseil called to me in a strange voice. "Monsieur, please come to the window." I went over to where Conseil stood and saw an enormous black mass outside. Was it some kind of gigantic whale? Then suddenly, I realized. "A ship?" I cried. "Yes, Professor," said Ned, who was also gazing out. "It's a sunken ship." It obviously had sunk only hours earlier, for there hadn't even been time for any sea life to start clinging to it. It was a sad sight, but its deck was even sadder. Four men, with their bodies twisted horribly, were tied to the masts. A woman, half out of a hatch, was lifting a child over her head as its arms clutched her neck. The helmsman was frozen at the wheel of the ship. His hair stuck to his forehead by the water. He seemed to be steering his ghost ship through the ocean depths. Our hearts were beating fast, but none of us could utter a word. Then I saw several huge sharks moving towards the wreck. The scent of human flesh blazed fire in their eyes. The Nautilus sped away, but the three of us sat frozen for several hours afterwards. On January 2nd, we entered Torres Strait, the body of water separating Australia from the island of New Guinea. Torres Strait is one of the most dangerous straits on Earth to sail through, not only because of its reefs and rocks, but also because of the cannibals who live along its coast. "What an awful stretch of water," cried Ned, as he, Conseil, and I stood on the platform on the deck of the Nautilus. With Captain Nemo at the helm, however, the Nautilus cruised slowly past most of the terrible reefs, but just as we were nearing the end of the strait, a sudden blow knocked us off our feet. The Nautilus had struck a reef and gone aground. Captain Nemo came out onto the platform to reassure us that no damage had been done. However, we would be grounded on the reef until the tide rose, and that would be in 5 days when the full moon came out. As soon as Captain Nemo went below, Ned exclaimed excitedly, "This is our chance to escape. We're only 2 miles from land." "The land, you see, Ned, is New Guinea," I replied, "and the natives are cannibals. But couldn't we at least get over there and hunt some animals? I'm dying to sink my teeth into some meat after months of fish." I went below to ask Captain Nemo if we could go ashore to hunt, and to my great surprise, he agreed. So the following morning, we loaded our guns and axes on the dinghy and set off. After 2 months at sea, we were overjoyed at being on dry land again. We ran from tree to bush, picking and eating bananas, pineapples, coconuts, mangoes, cabbages, beans, and yams. We stuffed ourselves as much as we could, then loaded the rest of our supply on board the dinghy. Then we returned to the forest to hunt for our main course, the meat. By late afternoon, we came upon a wild boar, which Ned killed with one shot. He then skinned it and cleaned it, cutting its meat into several fine chops. We returned to the beach and soon had a fire going. Our roasting chops filled the air with a delicious smell. Even I had to admit how much I missed the taste of meat. We sat down to start our feast. A chop was in my hand, halfway to my mouth, when a shower of stones and arrows came at us from the edge of the forest. "It's the cannibals!" cried Conseil. "Head for the dinghy at once!" What's going to happen next? End of chapter 6. Boy, that was exciting, huh? Ghost ship underwater, cannibals. Holy cow, this just gets crazier and crazier, huh, Thompson?
Yeah.
What do you think about this story so far?
Oh, it's awesome now. The cannibals are not good.
What's your favorite part?
When they got on the fish ship, the Nautilus, they said,
We'll see you for chapter 7.